For a few weeks now, people have been sending me emails about tundra swans. They've been on the move since late February, starting at their wintering grounds centered on east and west coast estuaries, most famously in Chesapeake Bay. They're headed to Arctic wetlands and must cross over a great deal of the continent as ice breaks up. Swans are long-lived, and the young remain with their parents through their first fall and spring migrations, so they learn their routes, and some stopover sites become traditional. My personal favorites are the Madison Audubon Society's Goose Pond in Columbia County, Wisconsin, and Alouise Bay right up here in Superior. A few swans usually stop along the St. Louis River in West Duluth, but they aren't usually at a good spot for easy viewing. Goose Pond and Wisconsin Point provide much closer vantage points. When I was driving home from Chicago on March 18th, I stopped at Goose Pond and saw a few dozen swans. By this weekend, there were over 400 there. I haven't heard that they've arrived in Alouise Bay yet. I'll be checking that out this week. There are plenty of places in the upper Mississippi Valley that are regular stopover stops, too. Tundra swans historically limited their diet almost entirely to submerged aquatic vegetation and organisms in the mucky bottom of shallow waters. But drastic declines in their natural food at some migratory stopover sites, and especially in their wintering areas, have driven them to exploit grain fields. They were given complete protection from hunting by the 1918 Migratory Bird Treaty Act and increased to the point where a limited hunt by permit was begun on the western wintering population in 1962 and on the eastern wintering population in 1984. If you're lucky enough to notice tundra swans winging overhead, their huge white wings beating steadily, you'll be seeing family units. If there are 4 to 6 birds, it's most likely a single family, the adult pair and their yearling offspring. But their young from previous years often join the family on the wintering grounds and stay with them as they head north. It's not known exactly when the yearlings and 2- and 3-year-olds start separating from their parents, but by the time the adults reach their actual nesting grounds, the young aren't normally with them. Like geese and cranes, swans are extraordinarily attentive to their mate and young, and like geese and cranes, remain with their mate as long as they both live, and seem to remember their offspring for many years. I find it interesting that males and females of bird species that mate for life, swans, cranes, geese, ravens, crows, jays, and chickadees, almost always have identical plumage, and they divide responsibilities for territorial defense and care of the young, so neither mate expends much more energy than the other. Bald eagles also mate for life, but they don't maintain at all the same kind of pair bond that swans, geese, and cranes do. Eagles seem to stay together from year to year only because they can't work out a property settlement on their nest tree. Adult eagles don't particularly associate together during winter, apparently preferring to take separate vacations. Swans are only interested in actually mating for a brief period each year, but the rest of the time they're devoted companions and seem to suffer through a mourning period if they lose their mate. By early May, swan migration will be over up here, and there's usually only a brief period of a week or two when they're here in good numbers. Get out and enjoy them while you can. Production of For the Birds is supported by KUMD and binoculars.com. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.